The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
The hospitality sector braces itself for further COVID restrictions. How much support is there for a united Ireland? And should political parties be allowed to declare themselves as charities for fundraising? We'll have all that and more on tonight's Late Debate. Justin McCarthy here with you tonight, and joining me in studio we have Jennifer Murnane O'Connor, Fianna Fáil spokesperson on children and TD for Carlow Kilkenny, John Brady, Sinn Féin spokesman on foreign affairs and defence and TD for Wicklow, Michael Fitzmaurice, independent TD for Roscommon Galway, and Dr. Kevin Cunningham, statistician with Ireland Thinks and lecturer in politics at TU Dublin. We do want to hear from you tonight, so please do get in touch with the programme. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie, or tweet the programme to @latedebaterte. Now, as you've been hearing in the news bulletin, NPHET has been meeting this evening to discuss new measures required to tackle the high rates of COVID-19. Among the measures being considered, we understand, by NPHET are a range of curbs on the hospitality sector, including eliminating the capacity of people to book multiple tables and reducing numbers to 6 per table. It's also believed NPHET are looking at restricting opening times of licensed premises and limiting household visits to people from 4 different households, along with the extension of the COVID vaccination certificate to areas beyond hospitality. Jennifer Murnane O'Connor, extending the COVID certs beyond hospitality, that was a measure that was rejected by the government the last time it was proposed. Is that something that is likely to be adopted this time, do you think?
Well, at the moment yet we haven't got it clarified, but there is a lot of concerns about this new variant, and we have to be so careful that, you know, that we actually are mindful of the particular, the hospitality sector. And I know last night at our PP meeting, there was a motion brought in about the EWSS that we actually bring back the full payment, because I have been talking to different hoteliers, particularly in Carlow, where they're actually down 40 to 50%, you know, with their bookings. And I think it's important now that we support them. Look, we are in...
When would a decision then be taken? Because I heard that Taoiseach is saying, look, the government is ready to start considering any advice it gets from NPHET straight away. So might we have a decision on COVID supports coming earlier than next week?
Absolutely, I would think so. And even today, we had the health measures that are actually, as we hear now, in the Dáil, where we're looking at, as you know, the hotel quarantine, we're talking, which has been brought in, the PCR testing, the antigen testing. So at the moment, they are bringing in, our restrictions are coming back in, and we're doing it as of tonight. They should be voted in, and they will start from Monday. It, you know, they want to give people a day or two to you know, learn what's happening, and that's so important. So absolutely, I think, look, we don't want to be back here where we were before, you know, but at the rates now, we're looking at the variant now, and the rates of the COVID-19 now, we're looking at with the Delta, it's something with over 4,000 COVID cases a day, and that is very high. So we have to control it. I mean, and I just want to compliment everyone. This hasn't been easy. It's Christmas coming. Schools are affected. Business are affected. And people have been so good. But all of us, again, with this new concern, this new variant, we have to be so careful. And we have to think of people's lives.
Okay.
For us, it's a matter of saving lives.
John Brady, it looks like further restrictions are being considered for the hospitality sector, including possibly an earlier closing time, limiting numbers of people who can sit at tables, and to stop multiple bookings of multiple tables. Will Sinn Féin support these measures if they are recommended by NPHET and if they are adopted by the government?
Let's wait and see what is actually recommended and what the government actually put forward as being factual new restrictions. And we know when Jennifer talks about the impact COVID has had on people, I agree with all of that. I also, you know, see the impact that it has had on the businesses, particularly the entertainment sector, you know, the live entertainment sector, who have already seen a range of measures put in place on them. And all of that has come about at the same time when we have government, at the outset of the pandemic said they would put in place supports for people who are out of work.
And they did.
And they did for the full duration of the pandemic. And we see in the last round of restrictions that were implemented, it actually coincided with the curtailment of the pandemic unemployment payment. And now we are here now where, you know, already it's bitterly disappointing that we're backtracking on the reopening of the entertainment sector, but it's also coinciding with the curtailment in the employee wage supplement.
But Sinn Féin has supported all of these public health measures so far, haven't you?
Well, look, I mean, we will take our advice, public health advice from NPHET. We will make our adjudication and make our mind up based on what is the right thing to protect our public. And I suppose you have to look at where we are now at this time. It is very, very concerning, and with the emergence of the new variant and the confirmation that there is at least one case here within the state. But we also have to look at the previous variant, the Delta variant, and some of the measures that have been put in place by the government, whether they were effective. We have the whole debacle around PCR tests that, you know, has to raise serious questions as to what impact that is having on the spread of the Delta variant within our communities. I mean, today in Wicklow, for example, you could not get a PCR test. In Dublin, you could not get a PCR test.
If you have symptoms, you stay at home and isolate, isn't
it? You stay at home.
So it doesn't matter too much if you if there isn't testing capacity
but look,
available.
I mean, we're 2 years into a pandemic now at this stage, and we're still talking about trying to protect our hospitals, to stop our ICUs getting overwhelmed. We're at a situation where the basics have not been put in place. We have not expanded our ICUs. We have not put in place, I suppose, the basic provisions around testing, around tracing, and in terms of the PCR tests that people need.
Okay.
And we haven't got the proper protections in there for workers, for families, when they are asked. And, you know, to hear, you know, the Taoiseach today come out and say, you know, talking about the entertainment sector, saying that they're taking one for the team. I think that is a slap in the face for those that work within the entertainment sector who have been asked to take one for the team over the last 2 years with very, very little and very, very slow supports actually coming about for them.
Michael Fitzmaurice, a texter in here, says a huge chunk of the public won't stand for further restrictions. Is there that danger that people won't stand for them?
In talking to people, right, saying in the constituency, there seems to be a bit of fatigue coming in. A lot of people were told a year ago that if they got vaccinated, if we got to, I think to something like between 85 and 90%, I think we're at 93 at the moment, that happy days would be away and everything would be grand. When you talk to people now, there's a serious deflation that we're sort of nearly coming back to square one again. And the measures that you talk about there, Justin, I just sort of smile to myself that at the moment, you can come in from another country into Ireland under the quarantine rules, and you have this antigen or PCR test, 72 or 48 and 72 respectively beforehand. And you still couldn't go into a pub one way or the other if you had one of them tests. I think that we need to be very careful with people, how we're separating them, how we're segregating them. And we need to bring people with us, because I think we're at a dangerous juncture. Like, I've talked to an awful lot of people that's actually has the got the two vaccines. And a lot of them are now sort of fatigued that they didn't even, they're not even gone for the booster.
And yet, though, if you talk to the hospitality sector, they will tell you that people are adhering to the advice and they're cancelling parties, showing up at pubs.
One thing we would have heard from the hospitality sector is that over the last 3 weeks or a month, an awful lot of parties have been cancelled. And when you look at the people, like the DJs and all those people, they're being cancelled on a daily basis now, all the different things those put in. And it looks, it's going to be a sad Christmas for the hospitality sector by the looks of it. I think that we need to put proper measures in place to make sure that they're, like DWSS, that they're basically financed, because you can't keep opening, shutting, opening, closing half-hearted ways, because if that continues, I've seen it last week, or this week actually, a note up about a business in Tuam. They have said, we complied with everything before, we opened, we're closing again because of problems. And if you keep at that, business people won't keep opening and closing. They will either do one thing or the other. And unfortunately, there's jobs at stake as well in the hospitality sector that we have to think of. And we have to make sure that either through the EWSS or if they're closed, you know, worse than that. And we have to look at the finances of those places, because on top of the EWSS, you have to pay some money on top of it. And I think we have to watch that they are financed properly.
All right, Jennifer, there were some mixed signals from the Tánaiste and the Minister for Finance today, weren't there? Because the Tánaiste was suggesting that businesses that are affected, that they would be supported by the government. And then you had Pascal Donoghue coming out and saying that the supports must come to an end at some point, that they cannot go on forever. So that there seemed to be, I suppose, two ends of the argument to be put forward there, wasn't there?
No, I believe, look, there's 880,000 booster doses have been administrated, and we are one of the top five EU countries that has actually administrated their third dose. So we are working with the vaccine, and nobody thought, I think, a few months ago that we would be back in this position again. So it is clear now that the government will have to make sure that the hospitality sectors and other sectors that, through no fault of their own, are in this situation.
Okay. Well, when will the additional supports then that are being talked about by the Tánaiste, when will they be put in place?
Well, I will be looking for this, and I have contacted the Taoiseach about this, and I will also contact the Tánaiste. We need to deliver on this because businesses need to survive. So we need to look at this now. And again, I will be contacting the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste again, as I've done.
Justin, one thing I think that we should... Are we jumping the gun too quick? Because if you listen to the South Africans, say their doctors talking or their specialists in this, they have said that thankfully the people there so far it has been mild enough. Are we jumping the gun?
If you look at the data that's coming out of South Africa today,
the numbers are
doubling in 24 hours.
I understand that, but I'm talking about seriously ill people. And what I'm saying is, are we jumping the gun? Because my understanding is that within a week to 10 days, we're going to have more information on the severity or otherwise of the new variant.
A texter points out that it does, of course, matter if there's no testing capacity. People can't afford to sit at home with mild symptoms while waiting for a negative PCR test. So that is a point. And also... and somebody else pointing out that earlier closing times mean that you're likely to have more house parties, which is a situation, John Brady, that we had back earlier in the year, isn't it?
Look, I mean, it is a concern, and absolutely everyone has to live up to their responsibilities in terms of their social contacts and doing the right thing. But I suppose the crux here is the supports that need to be put in place for people and the messaging that's coming from government. And, you know, the mixed messaging, even today, in terms of the supports for the businesses around hospitality, you know, you have, Jennifer saying one thing here, what she's going to do. Pascal Donoghue is saying something else.
Okay. Can I ask you, in relation to one of the proposals being considered by NEFA tonight is extending vaccination certificates beyond hospitality. Is that something that you would support if that was recommended?
Well, look, let's see exactly what it is they're proposing in the first instance. Justin, we know there are major challenges there at the moment in terms of the passport and whether it is actually being checked across the state. So we need to get what is in place right in the first instance.
We've seen other European countries, like in Germany today, they decided to effectively ban the unvaccinated from several public settings. Is that something that you would support if that were to follow here in another?
I think that's a very, very draconian move. I think there needs to be focus on ensuring people get vaccinated in the first instance. And I know there's challenges there. We've certain demographics within the state that are reluctant to get vaccinated. So there needs to be particular focus on that. There needs to be particular messaging on that. And indeed, there's difficulties there. I mean, my own son, for example, example, 16, registered 5 weeks ago to get vaccinated, is still waiting to hear back.
Okay.
So there's still challenges there in terms of, you know, people who want to get vaccinated, actually getting vaccinated. There's challenges in terms of those who want to get the booster shot. I was talking to a number of elderly people who showed up to Shoreline in Wicklow, which was administering the booster shot. They queued up for 3 hours in the morning to be told to come back in the afternoon. They came back in the afternoon to be told there was no booster shots left. So, you know, people want to do the right thing, but we need to ensure everything is in place and the messaging is clear, that we bring people along with us. And unfortunately, the mixed messaging coming from government has caused a lot of confusion, a lot of concern, and some kickback, it has to be said.
One thing I think we need to... I've been talking to hairdressers because it was mooted about a week ago about the likes of the vaccine having to be used as hairdressers. And when you talk to the hairdressers, there's a big fear, and it happened before, was that a lot of it will go to the black market of people sitting up at home, and there's a huge fear in that in relation to hairdressers. When you talk about Germany, I think it's draconian what they're talking about in Germany. If you go down a road, and Ursula von der Leyen came out with a gesture, we have to be very careful that we bring people with us, not against us, and that we...
At the same time, Michael, you have Paul Reid saying today that the unvaccinated, they make up a disproportionately high number of the cases in hospital, in ICU. And so, you know, does a tougher line need to be taken?
In my opinion, we were told that if 93% was done, that we'd nearly have immunisation from, you know, that we'd be sound. Do we go down the road? And we have to think of this. We have to be very careful. There's a lot of stuff out there that needs to be corrected. There's a lot of information, be it social media or whatever. And we need to talk about it openly. We shouldn't shut down conversation, and we want to make sure that we don't go down a road of saying to people, well, if you smoke, you won't be going here, or if you are obese, you won't go here. We want to make sure that we bring people with us as a country, not the draconian way that Ursula von der Leyen is on about it. I'd be very weary of her.
Jennifer, can I ask you, would you have any concern or problem with... having hairdressers ask for a vaccine certificate before they do a cut?
Well, I have spoken to hairdressers in my own area of Carlow, and some of them don't have a concern about it. But I think we have to be realistic here, in the sense of all the information that the government are getting are from the health professionals. And that is why we are where we are today. It's about trying to protect the people. And look,
as is always pointed out, the scientists advise, but the government implements.
Absolutely. But when you see...
The government has to take cognizance then of what is going to be actually adhered to. And I'm just wondering, in relation to the extension of COVID vaccine certificates outside of hospitality, would that be acceptable to you?
Well, I think once business can stay open, business people have spoken to me and they have said, and you know, you have to give them credit where credit is due. They've all worked so hard with the social distance, the mask, we're all, and even to go into the hairdressers, you can see the way everyone want to set up.
So they are in a position, but
I think businesses, like schools, we have to keep the businesses open.
Okay.
We have to keep the schools open, and it is just for a short time. Have to do that.
I just want to bring in Dr. Kevin Cunningham. Kevin, I know that you also have some interesting data which looks at restrictions in other countries and how Ireland ranks in terms of the severity of COVID restrictions in other European countries. Where does Ireland feature in that data?
Yeah. This is the Batfinnick School of Government from Oxford, who have been ranking, they've been scoring every country on a variety of different measures, from school closures to home stay-at-home requirements since the start of the pandemic. And on that measure, Ireland actually ranks over the course of the pandemic as the third highest in terms of the restrictions so far.
The third most severe,
Third most severe, yeah, exactly. And only Italy and Greece have actually had more restrictions. In fact, the other countries such as Germany and Italy and Greece and Portugal, who are all up with us, are actually the same countries which have a disproportionately large number of people who are over 65. So there's an interesting relationship between how many people over 65 are in a population and the level of restrictions. But, you know, since I think it was May this year, Ireland's basically been around the same as the kind of median European countries.
And one of the reasons why we were told that we had to have such severe restrictions is because of our ICU bed capacity, that's out of line with other countries. Is that factored into the data?
Well, you know, if you look at Germany, so Germany is very similar to Ireland in terms of the scale of restrictions, and Germany would be the fourth ranked country, and Germany's ICU capacity would be the best in Europe. So it doesn't really seem to feature that much in relation to that particular relationship at all, in fact. And a lot of the kind of narrative around where countries were doing well and badly doesn't really feature in this data. You know, Sweden's actually mid-table. Some of the countries that actually haven't had to have as many restrictions include Finland and some kind of more isolated countries. So it's quite interesting from that measure. I was just laughing to myself when I was hearing some of the things about the vaccines. One of the odd sort of restrictions introduced relatively recently was Latvia, where they've banned politicians who refuse the vaccine from voting itself. In relation to the vaccines, a lot of countries are going very hard on them, particularly Italy, France, and Germany, as you mentioned as well.
And what does the data, Kevin, say about countries that acted swiftly, acted quickly when COVID came on the scene? How did they perform in terms of their overall performance then?
There's an interesting comparison really between the Danish and the Swedes. I mean, they're very similarly located in the heart of Scandinavia / Europe. Denmark have ended up with much fewer deaths and much fewer restrictions. Sweden have gone in the other opposite direction. So they're probably the best comparison that you can have of that. Obviously, the UK is one example, which in 2020, they had among the highest restrictions in all of Europe, and they actually had the highest number of deaths. So in some sense, it is, as you say, that the ability to react relatively quickly. When you break down all these different indicators, there's workplace closures, there's public transport, stay-at-home measures. Ireland's generally the top 10 in almost all of these. But what's interesting in Ireland, and this is, you know, there's good reasons to do this and perhaps not good reasons, but we're quite different from other European countries in terms of international travel. So while we're much tighter, we're the second tightest on workplace closures, we're the 21st tightest in the EU27 on international travel. So a lot of other countries would have introduced borders where there hadn't been any at all. Germany introduced a border against the Czech Republic, Sweden introduced borders, and there's a lot of that sort of introducing borders and vaccines that other countries are a lot stricter perhaps than we are. Which is quite interesting. So we've chosen to introduce restrictions in some areas more so than others, I guess. So that's
Michael, does it surprise you that Ireland has the third highest level of restrictions in the EU since this pandemic began, according to those figures from Kevin there?
Not really, because if you look at the UK, basically they sort of went nearly free for all for a while. Some countries, I suppose it depends on an awful lot of different things. But Ireland had to bring in some of the restrictions.
Do you think they were justified?
The reason that such restrictions came in was because of our lack of ICU beds. That's the reality of it. If you look at our ICU beds per head of population compared with other countries, we're down at the bottom of the list, not above at the top of the list like we are in restrictions. And that's the reason why. And you look at it even this year. We were to bring in something like 24 or 26 more beds. They're not coming into next September. And this is a problem.
You can't conjure them up overnight.
I know. I understand that fully. But the only thing about it is overnight is longer than with 10 or 11 years. There was a report done 11 years ago that Ireland needed something like 520 or 30 ICU beds. We don't have them. And no one took any notice until we ran into trouble.
John Brady, one of the other things that sort of emerged today, looking at that, the briefing from the HSE, was an issue that was highlighted by the Chief Operations Officer there, Anne O'Connor, in relation to the shortage of carers at the moment. And that is something that they are concerned about as this next wave of COVID hits. Is that something that you're hearing and seeing in your constituency?
Certainly there are major challenges there, not just for carers, but frontline workers in general. And we see the challenges within our hospitals, nurses out on COVID-related illnesses. And we see the impact that's having even on student nurses, for example, who are out on places replacement as we speak, many of them, and they're being asked upon again to step in and fill that vacuum within, you know, our hospital settings, which prior to COVID, we have to bear in mind there were major challenges in there as well because of the recruitment and retention issue and the failure of government to address that particular issue. So student nurses, again, are being asked to stay on later and longer to fill out full shifts to, I suppose, fill that void where there are challenges for, you know, frontline workers. But, I mean, we have to go back, you know, if we look at some of those statistics that Kevin outlined there. I mean, I'm not surprised that we have been, you know, the third highest in terms of measures, lockdowns and that. And it all goes back to what state of preparedness we were going in to the pandemic. If you have a look at when the pandemic caught hold, you know, it spread like wildfire within our nursing home sector. You know, there was major issues with testing and tracing. It took months months to get that right. There was major
would you accept in terms of mandatory quarantine. John, that all those measures were necessary then as a result of what you're outlining there?
They were necessary when they were asked for by NPHET, and we see the government delay after delay and after delay. And the question has to be asked, those delays, what impact that had in terms of the duration and the length of time we and the people had been locked down because of the delays, the failure by government, you know, to put in place the measures around testing and tracing that were required, you know, the repeated requests from NPHET to put in place mandatory hotel quarantine. So you have to ask the question as to what impact that had on the duration of you know, the lockdown that Irish people and businesses, unfortunately, now are yeah, continuing to
And that's
to
a point picked up on by one of our texters, Jennifer, who says, surely part of the issue here is the failure to provide a competent healthcare system in this country.
You know, there is definitely concerns. And I think, you know, 18 to 2 months or 20 months ago, no one would have expected to be where we are. But in fairness, there is definitely an issue with CARES because I deal with it regularly myself. And I know that it's actually, there is funding there for CARES. It's actually filling the places now is becoming an issue. And that is the biggest issue that we're finding within the system, is trying to fill the places. And just going back about the restrictions tonight that are being actually voted on in the Dáil to do with the restrictions through Minister Sinn Féin are supporting them, because I was in the Dáil today and Sinn Féin have said that they would support the restrictions tonight. So just to let you know, you are supporting the restrictions tonight. But there is definitely concerns.
Thanks for that. I don't need to be told. But well, what we do need
David Cullinan saying it earlier on today, just because you said you didn't know what you were doing. But
I
know there is issues within the system. And
we
do need to, we do definitely need to address them. But there is funding there and we just need to fill the places. And we do have to look at our ICU beds.
Can I come in on the carers?
Yes.
The big problem with CARES is, at the moment, yeah, there is funding there. And yes, you'll get the letter out and you'll be told, well, you're allocated an extra 4 hours or 6 hours. But the problem with CARES is that the CARES, it's a subbed out job to a lot of providers right around this country. And what the people that work there cannot get finance for a car, couldn't get finance, you couldn't get a mortgage for a house, for the simple reason, it's like you get so many hours this week, you're on contract, you haven't a stable job. And the HSE needs to give basically a number of hours on a job type basis to those providers that they can say, we'll take you on full time and we'll give you the job. And unless that's done, we are going down a road of worse and worse number of carers. Would you agree?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And we have to address it. Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to talk briefly about mandatory hotel quarantine, because that legislation has been going through the Dáil this evening to reintroduce mandatory hotel quarantine. Let's listen now to independent TD Catherine Connolly, who was outlining her opposition to this legislation earlier this evening.
And here we are now at this stage, nearly 2 years into a pandemic, and we have not even begun to put a human rights frame on the restrictions that we're bringing in. So it's in that context that I'm supporting the amendments. I am not supporting the bill, I've made that clear, but I'm supporting these amendments because they seek to bring some level of scrutiny to the extraordinary powers that this Oireachtas is giving you without any analysis of those powers, with any human rights assessment, and without looking back on the powers that you've had and analyse them.
Michael, do you support the reintroduction of mandatory hotel quarantine?
Mandatory hotel quarantine isn't going to work, to be quite frank about it, for the simple reason. If you have a clear PCR test 72 hours, or if you have 48 hours beforehand, the antigen test, you're okay. Now,
Well, we know it doesn't. Stop the variant. No, but hold on
one second. What's the point in 72 hours beforehand getting a PCR test?
The minister did explain this evening.
Yeah, but hold on. Mixing with people for 2 days. In my opinion, if we were to do quarantine right, you would ask the person to quarantine for 3 or 4 days after they come to Ireland, in be it a house or wherever in their own in the hotel they're in, and then do a test, for the simple reason we are going to miss a lot of people that may be infected, in my opinion.
So mandatory hotel quarantine, the legislation being introduced this evening, is being put there as a contingency in case it's needed, right?
Yeah.
But the minister was saying,
I don't have a problem with someone coming from the countries like South Africa or whatever. I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem with the way it's set up, for the simple reason we are not going to solve the problem that we are looking at unless we look at it in a different way. Mm-hmm. I can get a PCR test today. They wouldn't give us an answer yesterday or the day before. If I'm going to England for a day or 2 days, I'm still under the 72 hours. Can I come back on that? They weren't able to answer that.
You can. That's been clarified today.
Well, it wasn't clarified for us. But I have gone and met an awful amount of people, and I'm still classified as clear. Even though I got done in Ireland, went to England, you could be on a business trip for 2 days and back again.
Mm. So what's your solution then?
Well, in my opinion, what we're doing at the moment, we're wasting our time, for the simple reason, quarantine in Ireland, while we try and stop some of the flights, and the first thing we have to acknowledge, I think there's no flights from South Africa, but we will put in a quarantine system at Dublin Airport. But in all fairness, anybody can come in through Belfast and come down, and they're not under the same limelight.
Do you, Jennifer, expect mandatory hotel quarantine to be brought back in?
Oh, I do, yeah. I do think it will come in. And I think, you know, I suppose we all have our own personal responsibility. And I think that's another thing that we have to be careful. If anyone has symptoms, we have to always wear a mask, you know, social distance, wash our hands. And that is part of the solution too. This is what we've been told from day one. And that is part of it. But I do think that it will come in. And I think just hopefully for another short period again, hopefully it won't have to last too long. But we are where we are. We have to put people's health first and children's health first. And that's why I think this has to happen.
John Brady, these are extraordinary powers, very limiting powers in terms of people's liberties, that if mandatory hotel quarantine is reintroduced, you're basically depriving people of their freedoms, their liberties when they get off a plane here. Is Sinn Féin satisfied, happy to support that once again?
Well, I think the powers that will be given to the minister, they're very serious powers, and that's why we've brought forward amendments to the legislation to ensure that there is oversight, that there is transparency and accountability around the whole process, and that's something that has been lacking up until now.
Those amendments have all been rejected, as far as I know.
The minister, as it was leaving, said he wasn't going to accept them.
And Sinn Féin still supporting the legislation.
Well, look, I mean, we hope that mandatory quarantine isn't needed. We still hope that the travel measures will be sufficient. So, you know, that's where the focus needs to be at this point, you know, and I hope that those measures, you know, are sufficient to be able to manage it. I think it's only in an exceptional circumstance that the mandatory quarantine will be needed. But it's really unfortunate that here we are again, 2 years into the pandemic, and the minister is refusing point blank to allow for transparency, and I think that's what's needed, and that's what people want. They want accountability, transparency around the whole process, and that, you know, failure by the minister, by the government to provide for that, it's actually causing people, you know, serious stress. It's actually damaging the government's credibility and the credibility around the measures that they're actually trying to introduce here.
All right, we're going to take a break now, and when we come back we'll be talking about how much support there is for a united Ireland.
The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back to Thursday night's Late Debate with me, Justin McCarthy. And still with me in studio, Jennifer Murnane O'Connor, Fianna Fáil TD for Carlow Kilkenny, Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD for Roscommon Galway, John Brady, Sinn Féin TD for Wicklow, and Dr. Kevin Cunningham, statistician and Ireland Think with Ireland Thinks and lecturer in politics at TU Dublin. And some news just in there now is that the Health Amendment Bill, which includes the return of mandatory hotel quarantine, that has passed all stages of the Dáil tonight. So that is legislation which is available to the Minister for Health if he should want to reintroduce mandatory hotel quarantine. We still have no details yet of that letter that is expected from the National Public Health Emergency Team to the Minister for Health, which would outline what further restrictions are being proposed. If we do get any details of that, we will bring it to you. Now, the recent Brexit uncertainty has brought the topic of Irish unity back into sharp focus. A poll in the Sunday Business Post last weekend examined some of the attitudes of people in the Republic towards the national question, with some surprising results. And we decided this evening to take another look at the findings of that poll and at the implications of it as we approach the anniversary of the signing of the treaty 100 years ago next Monday. Dr. Kevin Cunningham, that poll was quite interesting in the Business Post. If a referendum were held today, 60% of the people of the Republic would vote in favour of United Ireland. But if you tell those same people that that would mean higher taxes, then that support drops to 40%. So it's not really a clear-cut question for people, is it?
No. I think if you break the population down into three parts, essentially, one, effectively a third or so, that's willing to pay any price for United Ireland. Another third that's in favour of United Ireland, but, you know, highly conditional on what involves. If it's easy, they'll probably go ahead with it. And then another third that isn't quite as in favour. And I think broadly, it's too easy to draw the conclusion that the Irish population, you know, lacks the maturity to you know, give way on various different things that the unionists might want in terms of changing the flag and the anthem and all that sort of stuff. But I think it misses a significant section of the population for whom a United Ireland is simply undesirable in some respect. So the poll shows, as you say, 60% in favour of United Ireland, but that 60%. Isn't exactly a ringing endorsement. You know, I think if you go back to the line from Eamon de Valera that until I die, partition will be the first thing on my mind, I'm not sure if that's the case for the Irish population. You know, if we looked at previous referendums where there was 60% in favour of some initiative, you wouldn't really think that the thing was going to pass for definite. You know, things like abortion, for which there were very highly contested, but actually support for those sorts of things, abortion, same-sex marriage, perceived as being highly contested, but actually there's just simply far more support for those sorts of things.
The poll shows that obviously the highest level, or not surprisingly, I should say, the highest level of support for United Ireland is among Sinn Féin voters and then Green voters, I think, after that. But how solid is that Sinn Féin support for a United Ireland?
Yeah, it's 70 plus for Sinn Féin on that main figure, and then that falls to around 51% of those that are willing are in favour of a United Ireland if that meant higher taxes. So 51%, that's only half of the Sinn Féin vote actually in favour of United Ireland if it means more taxes. And I think what that really shows is that while a United Ireland may be the raison d'etre of the Sinn Féin hierarchy, it doesn't seem to be the fundamental issue for Sinn Féin voters.
I just want to put that to John Brady. John, does that surprise you at all that 51% of Sinn Féin voters, if you tell them that a United Ireland might mean higher taxes, then just 51% say they'd support it?
See, I think you probably have to question the tone of the questions that were put to the electorate, because I don't think that is a fair question to put to people.
Why not?
Without an actual debate taking place in the first instance. So, I mean, this, you know, the whole conversation around the United Ireland isn't just about painting, you know, post boxes from red to green. This is, as I see it, about fundamental change. It's about developing a new Ireland for our people. It's not just about, you know, changing those issues around the peripheral.
Having the debate. But if it were to emerge from that debate And the likelihood is that it would mean higher taxes for people in the Republic, given that you would have an end to the block grant in Northern Ireland if there was to be a United Ireland. Then it does show that that support among Sinn Féin voters for United Ireland isn't all that solid.
When I say a conversation needs to be had, and that means putting the facts on the table, because there's a lot of red herrings put out there, before that conversation actually starts. When, you know, an awful lot of evidence actually shows that there would be an economic benefit for this island with the reunification of this country, when you have a duplication in so many services right across the island, from our tourism to health to you name it, we have duplication. So, you know, the evidence shows that there will be an economic benefit for the people. And that's why I say that conversation needs to be had, because the people in this state, the people on this island, are actually miles ahead of some of the political commentators and political parties, particularly in this state. People see that there is change, that there is a new Ireland coming, and we need to start that conversation. And you know, around the constitutional change, that is coming. So you know, we've asked repeatedly that there needs to be a citizens' assembly, convened by the government, to start that conversation and start looking at all of these issues and looking at the facts, instead of, you know, scaremongering that, you know, there will be a cost, there'll be additional taxes, you know, and really before, any conversation takes place, they're scaremongering people.
Kevin Cunningham, just looking at some of the other data to emerge from that poll, when asked if I would be willing to change the current Irish flag to accommodate a new flag for a United Ireland, just 27% agree with that. And when the question was put, I would be willing to change the current national anthem to accommodate a new anthem for United Ireland, just 35% agreed with that. Does that surprise you at all, that just when you get down to the symbolism, that the question becomes much more complex for people?
No, a very similar poll with the journal .ie earlier in this year had almost identical figures. And I think while people might be in favour of a citizens' assembly, at the end of the day, if that citizens' assembly, which would be a southern citizens' assembly, doesn't come up with enough to change what the state looks like, then it might not be enough. I mean, some of the stuff that I thought was quite interesting, quite positive perhaps, was that there was a slight majority in favour of giving unionists permanent cabinet positions, which I think that's a real important issue, I think, for the potential to actually integrate unionism. But clearly on the kind of more physical, visible things like the flag and the anthem, that support for that really falls. So that's even further than the idea of higher taxes. So I'm not sure if John's assertion that the economic issues are the only thing that undermines support for United Ireland.
Michael Fitzmaurice, 62% of people in this poll said that the government should start planning for a United Ireland now. Is that something that you would agree with, that should start happening?
Most definitely. I think if you ask anybody in Southern Ireland here, would they like a United Ireland, everyone will say yes. 60%. But then, as has been shown here, when you need to bring forward a clear path on where we're going, working with both sides of the border. But there will be a fear, and there's no point in saying there isn't, among people in Southern Ireland, that will it cost us something? Is there going to be some pain in it? And that's why I'm saying we need a financial, or basically an economic path of knowing where you're going, because there's huge differences.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
If you see children going to, say, in the north, they get their lunches in school and they're basically better looked after than children down here in national schools. Where do they lose it, or does everybody get it here? These are the things that you have to make sure.
They're huge questions. What kind of a health service would you have? Yeah. What would you have, two education systems running side by side? It's enormous.
And there's a lot. And on top of that, in Northern Ireland, from what I understand, there is a lot of state paid workers in Northern Ireland that we have to make sure. Is there as many required if they're going to be working in an all of Ireland context?
Jennifer Murnane O'Connor, why isn't there planning underway for this? If your party supports a United Ireland. Why is your party not planning for it?
Well, I know that the Taoiseach has invested a lot of money in Northern Ireland, and I know that he does. It is definitely our plan. And it is, we all want a united Ireland, but there has to be the conversation. There's no question about it. Like we do, there's such issues there, as my previous speaker said, whether it's from health, taxes, whether it's our flag, whether it's our national anthem. Like, so there is, and we will, and I know that the Taoiseach and the government are committed we are committed to it. But like, we're in the middle of a pandemic here at the moment.
Fianna Fáil have been committed to it since its foundation.
We are in the middle of a pandemic at the moment.
Absolutely nothing
about
it.
And we will work on this, but we will. And the government
the last,
is committed.
The
are
last
committed.
20 months, Jennifer.
We're committed. And we will. And I think we all would love to see a united Ireland, but we do need to have a plan and the conversation. And there has to be a lot of goodwill here, but there's also, like, there's a lot of things have to happen first, and you know, we have to start at the beginning.
And John Brady, presumably, if Sinn Féin were to get into government, there would be a budget set aside for planning for this, would there?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we'd lay out a whole process. There needs to be a roadmap put in place in terms of leading us to a referendum on Irish unity. So, look, I mean, there needs to be a big piece of work, and that's where the planning needs to start now. Not in 5 years' time. People are looking for this. They are looking for constitutional change within the island. And the conversation, people are having it. It's happening in households right across the island. People are having this conversation. Right. The only people that aren't having the conversation are some of the politicians within Fianna Fáil and Fianna Gael. It's all well and good, flying the green flag, saying
we're
Republicans,
we're
committed
we
to
are.
It. But, you know,
no, we there's a lot of
We need to see the evidence. We need to start the planning.
I'm going to take a break there, and when we come back, we'll be asking the question as to whether political parties are charities or not.
The Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back to the programme. Just referring back to our last item there, a couple of texts on that. One texter saying nobody's mentioning the serious possibility of the Troubles starting again. It is unfortunately a high possibility that a united Ireland could bring back the past, positives and negatives to it, says that texter. And another saying that we can't organise 26 counties, so how in the hell will they manage to organise 32?
With a different political party at the helm.
One other person then saying one compromise on the flag could be three flags, one for the north, the tricolour for the south, and a third federal flag for the whole of the island. That's from Joe in Wexford. Now, should political parties be allowed to declare themselves as charities for fundraising purposes? Well, the Irish Independent reports today that Fianna Fáil is running its €600,000 raffle with a licence reserved for charities. The paper says the new law will mean that only charities and philanthropic causes like community groups and sports clubs are supposed to get a licence from the court to run a lottery, but Fianna Fáil has obtained such a licence to run its national draw. Now, nobody is saying that anything improper has happened in relation to this, but Jennifer Murnane O'Connor, how has Fianna Fáil managed to declare itself as a charity to get this licence?
Well, I know that the Fianna Fáil did apply to the court for a licence, and they were granted it within the legal framework. And they are having a draw which are selling €50 tickets to the grassroots, to our members. And I know the tickets are ongoing now at the moment, and they're €50 ticket. That is what's happening now within all. I mean, most political parties, I think, have fundraisers, and I know we are selling tickets at €50.
Yes, and this is new legislation that this charitable status comes under. And your party colleague, James Brown, who introduced this law a year ago, he said at the time that licences may be issued by the district court for charitable and philanthropic causes only, for example, for sports clubs and community groups. Is Fianna Fáil now a charitable or a philanthropic cause?
Well, all I know is that the Fianna Fáil did apply to the courts and they got a licence. And I know that we are selling tickets for €50 to our grassroots and to our members. And I know I'm aware that our deputy, Mary Lou MacDonald, is actually in America at the moment.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but I just want you to focus on your own party.
And I'm not sure what that has to do with Fianna Fáil using the loophole within the legislation.
Selling tickets, fundraising.
People will be wondering how a political party which has a staff which receives a large amount of public funding already can use a law which is designed to regulate funding for charities and community groups and sporting organisations?
Yeah. Look, I'm aware that Fianna Fáil, as I said, went to the courts, got their licence, and they are now selling tickets for €50 a head. The charitable status, I'll actually check into that for you. But all I know is we are selling tickets and they are €50
per head. How would a political party be designated as a charity?
Well, the courts granted it. Like, the courts actually granted the licence, so...
Because you utilised the loophole.
But the court actually granted the licence. Yeah, that's what I'm aware of.
Identified the loophole.
And we are selling tickets for €50 a head, yeah.
So you keep saying.
But I'm just saying that's the court granted it, yeah.
John, just on the point that Jennifer was raising there earlier, your own party is in the headlines this week as well for lucrative fundraising over in the United States, where your party reportedly raised more than €200,000. What will that money be used for?
Well, can I just firstly just say in relation to the Fianna Fáil issue, I think people are sick to their back teeth of the type of cronyism, the brown envelope in which Fianna Fáil are associated with. So for them to utilise a loophole within the legislation, the legislation clearly states that it should be utilised for charities, football clubs, etc. So, for Fianna Fáil to exploit that, to find a loophole...
It's okay if Deputy Mary Lou goes to America and sells tickets for $7,500 for round of golf and $1,000 a ticket for a dinner, but that's okay.
Mary Lou doesn't do anything.
There's
an organisation, Friends of Sinn Féin, in the US, which is fully compliant with all of the laws, fully open in terms of the money that is raised within America. All money raised within America is used for Irish Republican cause, to promote Irish unity, that I'm sure your money won't be doing. But the money raised in America is to help promote the Irish
and
unity,
so is ours the same.
Irish
our
republicanism,
goes back into our
and it's fully accountable and within
not
the laws.
Please don't talk over each other. I just want to bring Kevin Cunningham in here. Kevin, I suppose this brings into sharp focus the way in which political parties are funded or have to fund themselves. What's your own view of the story in the Irish Independent today?
Yeah, I mean, I remember years ago meeting SIPO about these sorts of things as well before, and one of the important factors and the reason why these raffles account for two-fifths at least of each of these parties. I think Fine Gael took in €1 million last year and do so every year on these raffles. But is that parties are only allowed anonymous donations up to €100 per donation. And then once you go beyond the €100, an individual is constrained that they can't donate more than €2,500 to a given party. So
the raffle gets around this.
Yeah, so yeah. There is a potential way in which someone could buy more than one ticket, and then they effectively have an anonymous donation that's above the legal limit. So it's a kind of... There's an issue with these raffles, I think, already.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. That is it from us for this week. My thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening to the programme. The programme was produced today by Penny Hart. Research was by Andrew Fleming. Broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Jamie Doyle was on sound. Stay tuned for Late Date with Ray Cudahy up next. But first, we hand over to Andrew O'Connor on the Sports Desk.